KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Well, pleased to bring back on to ABQ Connect Dr. Joni DeBrito. She's a licensed clinical social worker and licensed marriage and family therapist with nearly four decades of experience, a counselor for Focus on the Family, and provides expert guidance on recognizing and addressing mental health concerns in spouses, children, or other family and friends. Dr. DeBrito, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me on your show again, Steve.
Such an important topic that we cover. And, you know, we want to get into, I don't want to spend too much time on this first comment, but kind of the elephant in the room when you're talking to the body of Christ, to the church, there are those in the body of Christ that would be very concerned that we're talking about, you know, mental health and people that need assistance in this area, kind of discount a lot of the science and things that you've been trained in and you're able to share with us. Can you speak to that a little bit? And I'm sure, like me, you're well aware of examples in the Bible where we see prophets and others that have had their own struggles.
Absolutely. And it's always very odd to me that Christians would think that somehow we can have problems with every single part of our body except the brain. And the brain is one of the parts of our bodies that creates mental health issues. There are other parts that contribute to mental health issues. But when you think about, you know, just getting a little hangnail in your finger or something, and you can have pain there, why people would think that you can't have pain that comes from what's going on in your brain is really unusual to me. It's also really unusual to think that people would not understand that, for instance, when people are exposed to horrific things and traumatic events, that somehow that's not going to affect them. And so you're right, there is science behind mental health at this point. Centuries ago, when people started talking about the brain and the mind and so forth, it was more speculation and theory and so forth, but there is so much now that's available to show us different scans of the brain, and we see medications that are working for people and helping them, etc. So there's a lot of science involved. And I would just say that if you have a loved one that's suffering and appears to be depressed or struggling or anxious, or maybe has witnessed a horrific event and may show some signs, for instance, of post-traumatic stress disorder, of course, do them the favor of helping them to get some help from someone who's well-trained to identify. And also draw on those spiritual resources you have. There's no reason that you can't continue to pray and continue to fellowship with them and support them and do many things that, you know, are thought of as very helpful in the Christian realm. But in addition, you want to try to seek some help to see if someone might be able to identify what's going on so that they can get the help that they need.
Yeah, amen. Well, we are going to spend this time talking about recognizing mental health issues in family, in friends, in, you know, anyone in our sphere of influence. And part of that, there's, you know, several things we want to touch on. One of them is keying into things like behavioral changes. What are some of those key indicators of behavioral changes? Some are probably very obvious, but some may not be, but of mental health issues in a spouse, a child, or maybe a coworker, or just, you know, a dear friend.
Sure. Well, the behavioral things that we look for are changes in eating way more than usual, or not being able to eat at all, sleeping way more than usual, or not being able to sleep at all, changes in the social behavior of someone, where maybe someone used to be very outgoing and now they're very quiet and isolated. emotionally, their behavior shows itself in terms of maybe outbursts of crying or outbursts of yelling or violence or what have you. Or they may have no obvious affect at all, which is what we call a flat affect. So there's not really any joy and there's not really any sorrow. There's not anger, but there's also not happiness, etc. There, it's kind of like a monotone emotion that someone shows. That's called a flat affect. So all of those things are things we want to look at, as well as any sort of major shift in patterns of behavior that are just not normal for that person. Now, here's where we have to mention something to be careful about. There is caution required for pre-adolescence and adolescence. Because if you've ever been around a pre-adolescent or raised a pre-adolescent or adolescent, you know that their eating habits do change and their sleeping habits do change and their moods do change. And a lot of things change because of all of those new things that are happening in their bodies. So we want to be really careful not to assume that the changes we see in kids that age are related to a mental health issue. However, it doesn't hurt to check it out. If you're concerned, you can check it out with a family doctor or a mental health professional. And people are usually very happy to say, I think this is normal. I think it sounds like it's the normal rhythm of adolescence and puberty, et cetera. Or, okay, it looks like there might be something more going on here. You might as well have it checked out. And at the very least, someone can say, you know, your son or daughter looks really normal. However, here are some things to watch for just in case things get different in the future.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the adolescence. I mean, we at the beginning of this, we talked about science and you talk about chemistry.
Yes.
there's a little bit happening there.
Yes.
At that time in their lives. We also got into the behavioral changes and changes being the key word and really identifying, the difference between something that may be a mental health issue and something that's really quite natural. I remember in a sermon, our pastor one time was sharing, kids, they're born and they're kind of like puppies. You know, no matter what you do, you walk in the door, they're tails wagging and they want attention from you. And then eventually they turn into cats.
Yes.
And there's a season of that where they turn into cats and you become somehow very much not as wise as you once were. But then the assurance came from our pastor who said, hang in there, come around 20 or 25 years old. They'll start acting like a Labrador.
Yes, there you go. That's so true.
So there's those things that, naturally happen, and we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and God is the God of science. He created it, he's a God of order. So that's why we've been able to discover some of the things that you mentioned. You know, emotional signs is another thing that is something to watch for. In way of identifying mental health issues in loved ones and family, how can families really identify those emotional distress signs in their loved ones?
Well, again, they're going to be shown in an increase in the kinds of things that would alert you that something might be going wrong, such as an increase in violence or emotionally looking violent or crying a lot or isolating and being very quiet and very emotionally unavailable to people, etc. And so if you see changes in your loved one, again, those changes can be normal in adolescence and puberty, but for adults and younger children and so forth, those changes might be really obvious to you. And so that's when you want to ask some questions. And you can even talk to your loved one about that. Say, hey, I've noticed this. I've noticed that you seem to be a lot angrier these days than I've experienced you in the past. Or I noticed that you've been crying a lot. I've noticed you can't make it through a church service without leaving in tears. Tell me about that. And that's a really good way to open up the conversation, to just mention an observation and say, I'd like to hear more, or tell me about that.
All right. Well, listen, we are up against a break. We want to take a quick break and come back. Talk a little bit more about the communication strategies. Also, you had mentioned seeking professional help. Maybe dig into that a little more, as well as some faith-based support options that are available. Can you stay with us, Dr. DeBrito?
Definitely.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Hi, if you missed the first segment in our conversation with Dr. Joni DeBrito from Focus on the Family, she's a licensed clinical social worker and licensed marriage and family therapist, as well as a counselor for Focus on the Family. And we're going to get some more expert guidance. Always appreciate having you on the broadcast, Joni. And look forward to walking through some more of this. You had mentioned when we went to the break, you know, when you identify some of the behavioral changes or emotional signs in a loved one that may indicate a mental health issue, you know, how to communicate that. And as much as I appreciate what you shared already, and you can kind of rehash that if you'd like. Just dealing with, sometimes the, blowback on, bringing back, you know, bringing these, things to someone's attention. Maybe not only strategy, during, but even before you approach someone about it, are there some things you want to consider, prior to sitting down with someone to have this kind of discussion?
Sure. I'm always wanting to help people think about prevention first. So as much as you can, teaching your children, your loved ones, your spouse, your siblings, et cetera, the principles that apply to good mental health, things like making sure you are eating a balanced diet, making sure that you are sleeping and getting good recuperative sleep, which means no phones in the bedroom and no screens for several hours before you go to bed, because the screens keep you awake. And even if you fall asleep, you'll likely wake up in a few hours and have trouble going back to sleep. Also staying hydrated, getting regular exercise, and then some spiritual disciplines as well in terms of prayer and expressing gratitude. Those are things that we know that can help people prevent from falling into depression or anxiety or struggling with other kinds of mental health issues. Not to say that they can prevent them completely, but even if they have a mental health issue, those are things that are going to help them get better faster. So those are some of the things you might want to communicate ahead of time. Then I mentioned communicating what you have observed that causes you concern in someone, and then saying, I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about what's going on, about what I've observed, et cetera. And then from that point, as you mentioned, you may have someone who was just hoping that someone would notice and come alongside and help them get the help that they need. But very often people will say, oh, no, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. It's none of your business. They might get a little bit resistant. And I think there it's important for you to listen and hear them and respect what they have to say, because unless it's an emergency situation, such as they've communicated that they want to hurt themselves or someone else, unless it's there, you're not going to get anywhere by forcing them. So what you can say is things like, okay, but think about what I had to say, and maybe we can talk again. And if you do feel like you'd like to seek some help, but you're afraid to, I'd be happy to go with you. So you offer yourself as a support in the moment, but also as a future support.
So a family member that wants the best for, you know, the person they're talking to about an issue like this, and as you said, you left it with them. Can you talk a little bit about how much is too much to own yourself when you're dealing with someone else's mental issues?
We can only be responsible for our own thoughts, feelings, actions, behaviors, and beliefs. Now, certainly that's a little bit different if you're talking about much younger children, because younger children, for them, they aren't yet able to be fully responsible for themselves. So parents do have to take some responsibility in decision-making and that sort of thing. So there's a little bit more opportunity for parents of young children who appear to be struggling to say, we are going to go to the counselor, or we are going to go have this checked out by the doctor, et cetera. But once kids are older and you know, moving into emerging adults, or if you have a spouse or what have you, you have to leave that decision-making with them. And here's the other thing I want to say. You have to be very careful about not getting in the trap of feeling guilt, because there are numerous reasons that people end up with mental health issues. And while you might have contributed to them in some way, you may not have. And usually if you have, you know, and that's an indication for you to get some help as well. But it's very common, for instance, for parents to just beat themselves over the heads and struggle with so much guilt because a child is diagnosed with an addiction, or a child is diagnosed with depression, or a child is diagnosed with something else. And let's just remember that there are so many things that intersect in every person's life: their social life, their spiritual life, how things are going at school, how things are going at work, whether or not they end up in a nice neighborhood or a not so nice neighborhood or community, the things that are going on in the community, is there a lot of trauma, et cetera. All of those things can contribute to mental health issues. And we're not particularly helpful if we get stuck in guilt. What we want to do is say, and give that to God, you know, regardless of what contributed to this, how can I help now? What can I do to help my son or daughter, my husband or wife, a parent, a sibling, a friend? What can I do to help? And if you are stuck in that pattern of guilt and shame and feel like, oh, there's nothing I can do. In fact, I should stay as far away as I can from this person. That probably isn't going to be helpful. Now, again, if there's something you have done and you know that it has contributed to the mental health issues of your loved one, that's an opportunity for you to get some help and you to get some counseling to work on that, to be able to go back and potentially reconcile with that person later on. And certainly as a Christian, to confess that to the Lord so you can receive forgiveness.
Well, some really good insight. And, you know, we've kind of touched on just the beginnings of dealing with what we think may be a mental health issue. When it gets to the point where it's beyond what you can do, when is it that families really should consider professional intervention, and what resources are available that way to family and friends that really are just out of their element? It's at a point where there's really nothing more they can do.
If you have a loved one that is expressing suicidal ideation, suicidal thoughts, that's a time to definitely seek good physical and mental health for your loved one. And a person may not come out and say, I want to kill myself, but you may hear things like, sometimes I fall asleep and wish that I would never wake up. That's a reason to begin asking questions. What do you mean by that? If you see someone who is beginning to show a lot of tendency for violence and frustration with other people, that's reaching the level that you think that person might hurt someone else or has threatened to hurt someone else, that's another time to seek help. If you see an addiction that is getting out of control, whether that be alcohol or other drugs or gambling or a sexual addiction, or possibly a life-threatening eating disorder, something like that where they're threatening to hurt themselves or someone else, that's when you definitely need mental health care, professional mental health, professional mental health care, and also along with that, professional medical care.
Well, as we prepare to end our conversation, always want to bring it back to looking at these issues and dealing with potential mental health issues that we were maybe seeing in loved ones through a biblical worldview lens. And there are Christian principles and that can aid in addressing mental health challenges. As we come close to the end of our conversation, can you kind of walk us through some of that?
Sure. I think I would start with the ministry of Jesus Christ, which was a ministry of grace and truth. So to show grace to people when they're struggling, to not lecture them or label them or yell at them or what have you, is going to be especially helpful. On the other hand, you can go too far in just extending grace and doing nothing and not being honest when you are really concerned about a friend or a loved one. And so you also have to follow up that grace by being, in a very gracious way, truthful to say, I really feel like you need some help. Or if someone is in that category we just talked about, danger to themselves or others, you have to say, I am going to take you to see someone. Now, a person can always refuse, and that's very, very difficult. However, you can call if you feel like you need to get some emergency help. If someone is in such a bad state that they need emergency help the same way they would if they were bleeding or couldn't breathe, you certainly can call for that help. And then the other thing that I would say is that to draw on those spiritual resources that you have, to keep praying for your loved one, to be there with them, to provide fellowship and support for them, to help them connect to a community of loving people who are going to encourage them and show them grace and truth, and also allow them to be a part of their community. Sometimes communities want to keep people out who are struggling, and it should be just the opposite in a Christian community. we should be embracing those who are struggling in any way.
Yeah, and I would add to that is I love that you brought in prayer, because it is so powerful, and pray with others about it. And as you pray for the person affected by the mental health issue, maybe think to ask God for the wisdom of Solomon. You know, he was able to give Solomon such great wisdom, and he is not a God that is, it's not a one-time thing. Right. Not necessarily that you may get the wisdom just like Solomon, but God can certainly give you biblical wisdom and walk you through these kind of issues. It's a tough subject, and there's more help available. As I mentioned, Dr. DeBrito is a counselor at Focus on the Family, but there are just a web click away or a phone call away, other ways that those listening that need assistance can find it. Dr. DeBrito, would you like to share some of that contact information?
Sure. You can go to focusonthefamily.com/mental health and find a lot of information there. We also have a program called Alive to Thrive, which was developed for adults and who are in some sort of community with kids, whether they be teachers, coaches, parents, grandparents, etc., for prevention of suicide. It's called Alive to Thrive. You can go to alivetothrive.com, and it's got a lot of information about mental health issues and suicide, etc. And we also have a team of counselors at Focus on the Family that's available to provide free, and I'll say free of charge, consultations for anything that you are interested in learning more about. If you have a question about a loved one, you can call Focus on the Family at 855-771-4357, Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. in the Mountain Time Zone, or any other time zone, you can just adjust for that. And when you call, you'll give your contact information. That information will be passed on to the counseling department, and a licensed mental health professional will call you back within 48 hours.
Hey, I want to say Focus on the Family provided some great information going into this that I want to share before we finish up. Mental health issues affect nearly 25% of all adults in the United States, more than 1 in 7 U.S. youth between the ages of 6 and 17. So the likelihood there that nearly all of us have daily contact with someone we know is suffering from poor mental health. But we've walked through some of the ways to deal with that, and this will be archived at abqconnect.online. Go through it again, or maybe there's someone you'd like to share it with. And Dr. DeBrito, we always appreciate your time and look forward to having you on again real soon.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the time with you and your audience.
All right. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.